B-Pod Studios.
Make your smart speaker sports smart.
Of course you're saying goblins. It could be nothing else.
Listen to the Sports Hub anywhere on Alexa or your Google smart speaker. Right now.
It's like they're all on laughing gas.
It's Tusher and Rich.
Slow. Yeah, everything's in slow motion.
On Boston's home for sports.
These are the kind of people that take snoozes under trees.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And it's not every fan. I don't want to attack every fan, every Boston fan. But when people start yelling, you and all this stuff, there's but so much you can take as a competitor. And, you know, we're the ones expected to be docile and be humble and take a humble approach. Nah, that's the playoffs. This is what it is. You know, I know what to expect in here, and it's the same energy I'm giving back to them.
Oh, it's so great. It's truly basketball euphoria. You've got not only a series that is worth the price of admission, but Celtics fans, you've been waiting for this. You have a true bona fide A-tier villain. It doesn't get better than Kyrie Irving. I was completely out on the Kyrie hate for a while. It's like my hatred had dimmed, and oh, that game brought it right back.
You were out.
Not out, but I was over it.
Like, okay.
I'm
tired of this guy.
The flame had dimmed.
Yeah.
It dimmed, and now it is. The furnace has been turned back on.
Nice.
Because he's perfect. He's everything you want in a sports villain. Number one, and this is probably the best requirement, you got to be really, really good.
Yeah.
You got to be infuriatingly good. And at the end of it, oh boy.
Yeah,
if this guy was going to pull all that crap with the middle fingers and everything, and then he was going to kill you, oh, that's the best. I mean, that is like a dagger to the heart.
Yeah, because beating him means something.
Sure.
Beating Kyrie because he's really good would mean something.
Oh,
you're
not
just beating some schlub.
Yeah, right. It's like, you know, the difference between, you know, the people in the Marvel Universe beating Thanos, or beating the when Steven Seagal beat up the fat guy at the end of Hell for Justice.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that was easy. You could do that.
No, as Dan just said, it'd be like beating Kelly Olynyk. You know, it's like,
sure,
there's nothing special overly, what's the proper word?
Like, just special, you know, it's the
There's
pure
nothing
talent.
Fulfilling about beating it. Yeah.
No, this guy is one of the best in the league. He almost embarrassed you, and you still beat him. So that's the number one quality that makes him a great villain. Number two, he's a total hypocrite. The man walks around with sage, burning all this incense, talking about peace and love. And the first thing he does is he flips off the crowd, tells you to blank my blank, to people beforehand. But you know what? He's all about that. On top of that, in press conferences, he'll be like, you know, I don't even think much about them. And then he'll like have like a 500-word answer about the place. When they told me, they call me this and they call me name.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. It's awesome. The other part that makes him a great villain is that he reacts when the Boston fans go crazy on him. So I know a lot of people, boy, you should have heard the first like 20 minutes of First Take yesterday. It's like, Boston fans, I'm telling you, calm down. You just made him angry. Look at how great. No, he hates it. He legitimately hates it. He can't get over it. He talks about it constantly. His game's always going to be good. Accept it. Whether you boo or you don't. Except that he's going to be good.
You don't think he fed off the booze a little bit, though?
Maybe, but you knew he's got that in him. He's great. I'm accepting he's a great player. He's going to be good no matter what, whether you boo or you don't. But that hissy fit he pulled after the game. Oh,
I mean, look.
That might have been just as good as that last 30 seconds.
So
like, that was awesome.
So I acknowledge he pays attention to it.
Oh,
and he's, I mean, obviously, it's not like he's tuning it out or it doesn't bother him. Like, on,
no.
he pays attention to it. I just think he did feed off it.
And I think
he fed off it last year in game four when he came in and stomped on the logo and he scored 39 in both games. Like, I think it's kind of working for him,
mm-hmm.
but he looks like a giant baby
and
child. And I mean, the press conference is as hypocritical as it gets.
It's except that he's going to be great no matter what, because he is. And I don't think you booing him made him better. I think that he was probably feeling a little bit more and the middle fingers and everything. But how long can you keep that up? Either way, I don't care. He's going to be great. I accept it. But, oh, if you get that afterwards every game, ugh, it's the best. On top of that, he can't get over the people here. That's the other thing. He says it's the opposite. It's
well,
like
he tried to get over
me.
Remember? He said, oh, just play my highlights, you know, before the game.
Oh, like, it's great. Yeah. Now there are people who I think the booing does truly affect. Like if Ben Simmons came back.
Yeah, that might work.
Yeah, like, yeah. I think, matter of fact, there's a shirt that I bought that's got a picture of Ben Simmons when he was playing the Celtics, and he's standing all alone at the three-point line, and then no one's guarding him, and it says, shoot a three, coward. And that's, if every time Ben Simmons got the ball, everyone yelled shoot in the crowd, oh, it's going to be fantastic. But Kyrie is the perfect sports villain. So good, so hateable, so hypocritical, and this is everything that you have wanted. And on top of that, you've got a series now. Now, the one thing that's being understated about all this, and there's a lot of people wagging their fingers at the Boston fans. First of all, I think that it was great. It's hysterical when you watch it, too. But Kevin Durant, a lot of people have been saying that, you know, he's going to go off. And sure, I think he is. But let's not discount what the Celtics were able to do to stifle him. I mean, this wasn't an off night. And I've heard that being dismissed as well. They were suffocating on him.
He missed some. I mean, look, Tatum's defense on the final play was great. And Horford and Smart, specifically Horford jumping Kyrie before he gave the ball up to Durant. Like, that was great defense. I do think Durant missed some open jumpers. He missed a wide open three that would have made it a three possession game. You know, he missed some elbow jump shots.
He hit a three to go up five at one point.
He hit the three. I thought it put him up two.
Two, maybe. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I think Durant missed some shots he normally makes. They did run double teams at him. They did jump him and blitz him and bring, you know, length with Jason Tatum at him, Al Horford at him. There's nothing that he hasn't seen. So to me, I'd anticipate him going off, but look, you won a game you had to win. You couldn't lose a game to the Nets where Kevin Durant had an off night. You couldn't afford that.
No, that's true.
So they survived that.
So once again about Kyrie Irving, you know, and I know a lot of people have been, you know, having all these different takes as far as whether you should say anything that makes him angry. I mean, just come on. How amazing. Oh, how is this not like sweet, sweet music to your ears?
Well, we've never seen that from you this season where you are running down the floor, flicking people off.
This is the first time you actually caught it because it's a big time game. I respond a different way. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to focus on that. If you want to ask me questions about the fans, go ask them. Go on the street and ask them questions. Right?
Oh, yeah. What's great, too, is that.
Yeah, Jamelli. get out there and ask the people, would you?
You got to be out there tomorrow night, right? You got to be doing a recap. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. So they asked him, was like, well, why the aggression towards the fans? Like, what aggression? You're the one, you know, you're the ones who are aggressive, not me. All the fans are aggressive. I wasn't the one who was aggressive. No, you're flipping birds going up and down the court, which, by the way, I am not going to sit here on a high throne and go, how dare you?
No, it's with hilarious. My
fans. It's great.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it every single game, please. It makes everything so much better about this series. Kyrie, you continue to be the prick that you are, and let us embrace it. Let us embrace it. We'll give it right back to you. That's the other thing. He gave the Boston fans permission to give him hell. He said he loves it. Bring it on. Feed off of it. You know what? By all means, do it. Mm. And I know Sean Grandy during the game, during the regular season, where they were booing Kyrie Irving, he was poo-pooing the fans to do that. You know what? That's one of the great things about sports, is having a true villain, well, a guy that you detest for basketball reasons and, you know, kind of douchebaggy reasons off the court as well, and the way he interacts with the fans. And to me, he's perfect. Don't listen to guys like Sean Grandy. This is what makes sports fun.
Yes.
This is what takes sports. This is what keeps it from being just an X's and O's, you know, straight to the bucket. Getting these guys pissed off and riled up like that and getting in their heads, it's working. I love it.
To me, Sunday was great. Like, Sunday was a great game, obviously. Pretty much from the opening whistle, maybe too many fouls in the first quarter.
That first quarter was intolerable. But
Zarba.
But it was played...
you know his name.
But it was played with such intensity. Like, it was played like a Game 7. And as much as I wanted the Bulls for the Celtics, because the Celtics would destroy them... Mm-hmm. This is so entertaining for us. It's entertaining for fans. Like, it's just, it's a great watch. Game one was a great watch. And what I loved about game one, too, is everything. And I know you didn't say this, but it's an obvious statement. Like, nothing crossed the line with Kyrie.
Yeah.
Like, to me, everything was in bounds.
Yep.
You know?
And you keep it that way, obviously. And that's something we didn't even need to say.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It goes without saying. But part of what was great was, like, Kyrie's up there bitching. He's like, oh, I'm called this and called that. And if you said that to me, like, most people aren't about that life. You would have said that to me where I came from, blah, blah, blah. Like, nothing anybody said was that bad. Mm-hmm. Nothing anything you did was that bad. You flipped the bird. Yeah, you told people to blank your blank, as you put it. But nothing to me was all that bad. Like, everything was relatively good, clean fun. And so if that continues, that'll be great. Yeah. I wonder, and I don't know how you feel about this, Joe. I wonder if Kyrie's kind of attempting to, and Beadle brought this up to me yesterday. I thought it was an interesting point. Is Kyrie trying to egg the fans on to get it to go to that next place, ooh, where now it's this self-fulfilling prophecy of, well, you know, I told you about Boston sports fans. Well, and
by the way, on that one, I always wondered if Kyrie was right. You know, was it Brad Stevens? Was it Ainge who tried to trade him? Was it the young guys that he could never win? Like, I always want, because when they weren't good this year.
Was Wright leaving?
Yeah, like saying they can't win with those guys.
Oh, no.
Like, but
no, that, no, because I mean, during the All-Star break, you remember the video where courting, he was already plotting with Kevin Durant two max contracts.
But where I'm going with it is he didn't want to do this in Boston, and that's what makes it hard for me to watch. We all know he's the greatest player. We know he's a great, he's a Hall of Fame talent, like legit.
No, his career ended tomorrow, he'd be in the Hall of Fame.
All I'm saying is it makes me sick that he can do this and didn't want to do it here. That's why I hate him. And everything else that you're saying makes him a great villain.
It's because he can't be the guy. He can't be the number one. He has to have someone he can hide underneath. He did it with LeBron. And by the way, I've given Kyrie all the credit in the world for LeBron's second ring. I mean, he's the reason that LeBron has that. Yeah. And now that he's got Kevin Durant that he can hide underneath, it works for him.
But they both cry. Like we were talking about this yesterday.
It's great.
Durant's burner accounts and it does all these other things. But like they're made for each other. But
can I just jump? I found Durant to become more endearing with all that stuff.
Recently,
by
the
way.
Right? The Bruce Brown stuff.
I used to be very anti, you know, the baby social media response. I've kind of come to appreciate the Durant.
Oh, you like it now?
Firing back. I kind of
going back at what's it called? Michael, whatever his name was. Who's the guy that you guys don't like here? You had him on the show. You hung up on him. Oh my god! Like,
Rappaport.
Rappaport. Yeah, like Kevin Rappaport went at it.
Or even just like Durant, just like, you know, he's
maybe
like
outside, bitch.
Like, he's doing exactly. He's doing the same stuff. He's like talking to fans on the baseline, like sit the F down and all this stuff. Like I've kind of started to appreciate the Durant stuff. Irving to me, I don't like because it is. So it's so hypocritical the way Irving carries himself.
Peace
I don't
and love
like.
And like the sage, and then he gets out there and it was like, you know, flipping everybody the bird. The one thing I'm kind of proud of the NBA, although I do find it perplexing, is how there hasn't been a fine that's come down
but there will be.
All right, but I mean,
they're gonna. I'm sure it's announced today or tomorrow. So he'll be fine.
All right, well, if they fine him $25,000. It's still. I'm still kind of proud of the NBA that there's not like any kind of.
And they let him play late. Like I know
teetotaling.
Yeah.
Just one last thing. One other thing we brought up yesterday is remember last year they lost to the Nets and there was reports guys went out with Kyrie after the series and hung out. When that game started, there was no dap. It was all head nods. It was like the Celtics weren't. You know, hugging it up with Kyrie. It was.
You didn't think they were too friendly this time?
Not at all.
I'll pay closer attention to that on Wednesday because I'll be honest, I wasn't really looking for that. I didn't notice anything to your point.
But it just
point.
Seemed like they came out with, like, we don't want to be friends. They got criticized for that last year. There's a bunch of young guys hanging out in Brooklyn after they lost.
They deserved it. And so good. I hope that they understand how their fans feel about Kyrie because Tatum's buddies with him. Jaylen came out last week in an interview with Abby Chin. And said, yeah, we're friendly now. We butted heads when I was in Boston, but now we're friendly. We talk on the phone. So, like, you know, the fan, you can be friends with whoever you want, but the carrying on the court in front of the fans, I think turns a lot of fans off, and it'd be a good thing if they're more aware of that. They should be more aware
of that. I just think that this team, and you saw all season long signs that they have found new ways to mature from what they had been to what they are now, and maybe that's just another one of those notches, is that we have learned that we are not going to be starstruck by a guy like Kyrie Irving anymore. It's not going to be afterwards. You know, we're like best buddies. We can be friends, but on the court, we are going to play our asses off against each other. You don't have to be fake, like, you know, getting in his face afterwards. But, I mean, you don't have to be like hugging buddy-buddy and all that crap because I think that they know that they gross the fans out. In so many ways, this team has matured. Will they win this series? I don't know. I predict them to win in seven. I think that they're the better team, and it's mostly because of their defense. But my God, after seeing that last 30 seconds, it's just like it couldn't have ended any better for that team. Now, here's the only problem. I'm sorry, Joe.
No.
The only worry I have, not the only, but the biggest worry I have, is that the Celtics are going to enjoy sniffing their own farts a little too much.
There's a little bit of that going on.
I mean,
it's been going on for a while with all the awards that are out.
Well, I was going to say the smart defensive player of the year thing yesterday had me kind of feeling the same thing.
You know? Yeah. Because that's something that teams that are not mature, like immature teams do. They buy their own hype. They sniff their own farts. And next thing you know, they're dogging it. And I don't think this Celtics team has it in their DNA after what I've seen this season, but I don't know yet. They haven't proven to me that they don't.
It's a Wednesday's a letdown spot. I'd agree. Maybe they don't let down, but that's a letdown spot.
I mean, defensive player of the year, they're feeling high about, right. You know, Marcus Smart's feeling high about himself, and he's so important. And then, you know, they go through this big emotional win. Let's just see if they're able to stay locked in throughout this series.
Yeah, and I was going to say on that final defensive play, I want to credit the Celtics because they did well. But Kyrie held the ball too long, tried to play a little bit of hero ball, got it to Durant a little bit too late. Where if you look at it on the Celtics with the final play, every single player touched the ball.
Yeah, it was great.
But my only thing is, where the hell was Tatum? Why is he on? Hey, they scored, right? But what was he doing over there? And he did pass Durant. He passed Kyrie, did a little spin move.
But what was he doing where?
Why was he out on the I want him with the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're going to complain about that final play?
No, just where was he in the play?
If he was scoring the winning basket.
I'm saying is if Smart shoots the ball, we're all like, where the hell was he? But he didn't.
Tatum never would have touched it.
No, but I get
what Joe's saying. Like, you know, if it.
No, I don't know what you're saying.
Watch the play. Even Grandy says it in the highlight.
But no.
Here comes Tatum from trailing from behind.
But if there's
and look where he went.
No, right. But if
I know. I'm crediting him. I'm just saying.
But even Tatum was like, I'm surprised Marcus passed the ball.
He said it himself.
So if they had the ball for 12 seconds, you'd like Jaylen to be like, oh, you know what? Let's give the ball to Tatum. I at least understand that. Yes. It ended up working out. But like,
yes, it worked out. I'll shut up.
We were bordering on trying to find something.
You were talking about spelling farts. And I just wanted to at least compare. Where the hell was he? Spelling his own farts?
Yep. Yeah.
Maybe that's the case. Maybe he was huffing his own farts. But listen, if that's the case, then it's like Popeye spinach because it became superpowers. They made it work. You huff all the farts you want there, Jason Tatum, if that's the way you're going to end things. Oh, my goodness. I can't wait for tomorrow night. This is truly one game in, I knew it's already over-delivered. It really has. And I knew it was going to be great. But just think about when you add the whole Simmons angle and if like Robert Williams comes back and all the bitchiness back and forth. I mean, this is what it's all about. And you got a true A-plus villain. Like A-tier, just everything you've wanted. I can't think of a villain that I've hated this much since LeBron James.
I was going to say, it's got to be LeBron or Peyton are the last ones.
Not even Peyton.
And those guys didn't play here.
Yeah, because Peyton was infuriating on the field, but he didn't have that off-the-field dickishness.
I think A-Rod.
A-Rod's another good one.
That's A-Rod's a good one.
A-Rod's a really good one.
Because he had one leg in the pants.
Yep, A-plus tier A-Rod. I'd put him in that world, too. LeBron, A-Rod might be rarefied air as far as recent Boston sports.
Yeah.
I can't really think of... Yeah, you know what? I'm sure as soon as we go to break, I'll think of a few. All right, 617-779-0985.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Now, more Toucher and Rich.
I mean, look at us. We are just three intimidating sons of bitches.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I didn't expect to come back to New England, but I always had respect for the New England Patriots, Mr. Kraft, John DeKraft, Bill Belichick. And one thing I learned, man, you never burn your bridges down. You handle situations as a man and as a grown-up. And if I didn't do that, I don't think I had an opportunity to come back here. So pretty sure I made a good decision by acting like a grown man.
Oh, it is Toucher and Rich. And how about this? Be listening this morning at 7:55 for your chance to score a pair of tickets to see comedian Bill Burr make history as the first comedian to perform at Fenway Park, America's most beloved ballpark, it says here, on August 21st. For tickets and info, visit redsox.com/Bill Burr. Tickets on sale Friday at 10 a.m. That's coming up at 7:55. I saw this announcement, and that is a gobsmacker. Like, you see that, you're like, oh, my God, Fenway Park? Now, are they going to set this up? Do we know anything about how the stage is going to be set up? Because I mean, if they set it up like it's a Foo Fighters concert, how many people is that? Is it 35,000?
35,000 plus?
Which is
plus if you're adding people on the field and stuff like that. Is that what you're saying? It's probably more.
So yeah, like a sold out concert at Fenway is probably about like 30.
You would take
thousand.
Away all the bleachers. So well, that's a good maybe point. Make up for that on the field.
Maybe it kind of evens
capacity
out,
in there is. I mean, it's twice 30, the size
38,
of the Garden.
Something like that.
So Bill Burr obviously could sell out the TD Garden. I think
multiple nights. Yeah, he's done Madison Square Garden a couple of nights.
But you think he could sell out here multiple nights at the TD Garden?
I do.
Well,
no.
Then that's awesome because I was imagining, I was like, okay, they're probably going to do the thing where they put the stage at home plate and then, like, you know, where the stands are. And I think there's been bands who've done that before. And you said the Dropkick Murphys, you saw them at Fenway and they kind of did something.
They did that where they put the stage actually over the bullpens and then the bleachers became the seats, which were great because then all the concourses and everything else out there were open and you just walked up the ramps and that was the stage. You were looking down on the stage. So it was actually very cool.
Bill Burr might be the comedian that could have it set up like a traditional concert. And be able to sell that out.
I'm going to go with that.
Man.
Just because it's the first time. This is the first time a comic is playing Fenway. So.
Good on Bill, man. That is awesome. So. Well, hopefully we'll have him on and he can obviously plug that. I mean, that's got to be intimidating as a comedian, too, to play a place that size. I mean, there you go. So tickets on sale Friday at 10 a.m. Good for him. We got tickets for you at 7:55 for that. But Andrew Callahan, he is the Patriots beat writer for the Boston Herald. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Andrew, good morning. How weird was that Malcolm Butler press conference yesterday?
Good morning, fellas. And I got to tell you, I loved it. That was my first Malcolm Butler press conference as a Patriot because I arrived in summer of 2018, months after all this had blown over. I'd spoken with Malcolm a couple times when they had joint practices the next summer down in Tennessee with them. And he was great. He was as honest as I think he felt he could be. And that's what you want.
So what was the feeling when you left after all the questions? And by the way, good on all you know guys in the press asking about the one thing that Patriots fans obviously want to know the most about, and that is what the hell happened there after the Super Bowl. We were talking earlier. I still think it's the worst coaching decision in the history of the NFL because it wasn't think about it. It wasn't just one play. Like we've as I said, I mentioned Marshawn Lynch should have gotten the ball at the goal line instead of passing it. That's an awful decision because it cost him a Super Bowl, but that was one play. In my opinion, that was an entire game's worth of plays that you could have changed at any moment because all you needed was one stop and it cost you a Super Bowl. So I think that's the worst coaching decision in the history of the NFL was benching him for an entire game. But when you talked to him and his answers, did you gain anything from what he had to say?
Definitely. And it came towards the end because the real new part about, you know, the benching in the Super Bowl was the fact that he confirmed he and Bill Belichick spoke after the game about exactly why. And when you tie that to some other reporting, specifically what came out in Seth Wickersham's book last year, you know, you have Malcolm Butler pointing to the coaches at the team party after and says, these mother bleepers. So it seems like obviously he was still pissed at them, but he understood at that point why he'd been benched. Now he confirms that. And it seems like he knew at that point why he was benched because they had a conversation none of us knew about until yesterday.
No, I'm sorry. I couldn't get from the clips. The conversation was immediately after the game or it was recently?
He said, Phil Perry asked him directly, was that conversation right after the game? And he said, yes.
Wow. Okay. Because, I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that if you buy into the whole theory that he was just a little under the weather, then why was he crying on the sidelines? You know, there was like so many things that didn't add up with a narrative that I think the team has slowly been trying to leak out of there. And like the whole I didn't want to burn bridges thing seemed like, you know, there's more to it. Now, just from all of the things that you've gathered, what do you believe happened?
So I'll say up front, I'm open to alternate explanations. I'm not of the belief that, you know, maybe this is the worst coaching decision ever. I'll say probably the most impactful bad decision because, look, we've all watched Jets football for 25 years, right? Like somewhere in those 25 years, the Jets have made the dumbest thing or maybe the Colts. But, you know, for me, I defer to Seth Wickersham's reporting. And again, I'm open to other explanations. But, you know, in that book, he says that Butler supposedly gave lackluster effort in practice and clashed with coaches. And that is something that would have royally ticked them off from Bill and Matt Patricia because competition is their ultimate, you know, ideal down in Foxborough. They worship at the altar of winning. They will sacrifice anything there. And this was, as best as I can tell, you know, your God-fearing parents catching you sleeping in on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. And that year, you know, that Sunday was Christmas and Easter balled into one. So they just can't have it. So that's ultimately where I land on this. But, you know, I'd be open to a couple different options.
Is he going to make the team?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the way his contract is structured, there's enough guaranteed money in that first year, meaning this upcoming season, that he'll be there. And my question back to you would be, have you seen the corner depth chart?
Well, so that's definitely true. Says he was out of football last year, right? So it kind of makes you wonder if he's got a guaranteed spot on the team.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, he's 32, right? So after that time off where you wonder about him physically and he's kind of downplaying it, say, look, I'll tell you right now, I'm going to overcome those odds. For him, I think, you know, he's a player that they know. He tackles well. And his last full season, too, I will say, 2020, which is a while ago, he had 4 interceptions and over 100 tackles, both of which were career highs. So I think the production is still there. I think you have him for that first deal. He can play inside and out. It might not be great, but again, it's going to be better, or at least up to par with all the other options.
All right, Andrew. So next week, big week, obviously, and there's a lot of speculation in the draft that the Patriots would be better suited actually trading down because they obviously needed a lot of pieces. What are you hearing and what do you believe their best move should be?
Yeah, so it's funny. I had a couple people on, you know, to talk about this around the league and a new podcast I'm having. It's coming out tomorrow. It's called Pat's Interference. And I'll tell you, the consensus we reached was trading down because you look at the meat of this class, and people have been telling you this since February. The depth is really 15 to 60. So if you're the Patriots at 21, you're in the front end of that, right? You know, you can get back to maybe 30 or 33 and add a pick somewhere in the 40s and still be able to coop a lot of value, because I think they're looking to plug 2 defensive spots early. That's my sense. I don't think we're going to see a receiver until maybe the 3rd round, and they want to go back up the middle. You know, defensive tackle is an area that I think has been really underrated. I'll have more on this next week, but that solves a lot of issues that you look at that last stretch last year. The Dolphins are running them over. Even the Bills, whose running game stunk, you know, comes to life against them twice.
Colts.
They want to solve those issues as a way that they see to help Mac Jones.
Now, is it true that every one of the draft picks in the first round has to ride that little boat out to the middle of the lake in front of the Bellagio? Because if so, the first round's going to take like 5 hours.
I don't know, but it reminds me, you know, I don't know if you guys watch the NHL All-Star Skills Challenge. They had those dudes out on the middle of that lake trying to fling pucks into little circles like this was an activity you had a substitute teacher in gym when you were in middle school.
Sure.
And it dipped forever. So anything in the middle of that pond, it seems like goes straight to hell. And I'm with you. I hope they skip that after maybe the top 5 picks.
I saw that plan that you're just going to bring. And you know, to that I say, well, that unless they – you know, there's no possible way you could make that faster, because just getting on it, being the guy that's picked because you don't know when you're being picked, walking up, taking the boat over.
Hug your family. Your agent. Oh, hop on the boat.
It's
hug Goodell.
Gratuitous amount of jackassery and highlights until he's actually up there getting his, you know, the awkward hug, you know, from Roger Goodell. So I don't know if that's going to be bad or so bad that it's good as far as TV is concerned.
Well, you're talking to a guy who would love to ship this back to Radio Music City Hall for no other reason than nostalgia and say, look, let's bang this out in 2 days like we used to.
Yeah.
We all sat on our asses on the couch, left an imprint, you know, rounds 1 through 3 on Saturday, rounds 4 through 7 on Sunday. For us in the media, it's one weekend as opposed to late Thursday, late Friday night, all day Saturday, and then you get Grumpy Bill at the end who doesn't want to talk to us. Let's do this in 2 days. Bring it back to New York, baby. I think that was our sweet spot all along.
So I'm nostalgic for that, too, to be honest. I just want to circle back to Butler for a minute. I didn't hear the full clip. I read it. But at one point, didn't Malcolm Butler even say, like, you know, you guys can do your own research on this story? Do you feel the need personally as a reporter to do more of that? Do you want to do more digging on that? Or do you think the story's kind of over in your opinion?
I don't think the story's over because we don't have an answer, right? But yeah. For me, you know, the opportunity cost is spending extra effort into something that, you know, now I would have a little bit more information, a few more sources to go to about this than I did at 2018 starting at Mass Live is, you know, how much time do I spend on that versus learning, hey, what are they going to do in the draft next week? Or who are some people they might be targeting via trade, or what's going on with Mac Jones in these offseason workouts. So, you know, it's something you might work on the side, but, you know, he kind of said it too, like we can't all live in the past. I think I'm not accepting the mystery that it is, but I knew the people that were on this beat, you know, before I came aboard, some of whom are still here, they haven't cracked it. And the best we have is that Malcolm Butler had a crappy week of practice, clashed with the coaches. And I know from my time covering the team since, again, that would be enough for them to sit him down as much as it was the Super Bowl.
You see, if this is the 70s and you had one of those Bob Ryan expense accounts and a lot of these players weren't making much cash, it's like, how about we go to Scotch and Sirloin? Let me buy a few drinks. Let's talk there, Malcolm. And then, you know, somewhere at the bar, you know, you would possibly hear him spill his beans, but of course, things are not the way that they used to be. Those Bob Ryan stories, like from just the way that, just to get a free dinner, they would hang out with him and just tell him anything he wanted to hear, were just fantastic. Times, they haven't changed, haven't they, Andrew?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think, though, if I had the Bob Ryan bank account or expense account of the 70s, I would have gotten in a lot of trouble. So in some ways, I'm thankful that does not exist, but I'll settle for a happy medium there.
Sure.
Hey, Andrew, I just want to ask you, Bill Belichick turned 70 over the weekend. How long do you think he'll coach the New England Patriots?
You know, it's funny. When that happened, I was thinking back to just, you know, we've referenced this three times. I started in 2018 on the beat. I think people were asking me that question then. Jones, you might have even done it when I came on at night. And my answer would have been about 3 or 4 years. And here we are, you know, 4 years later. And the guy's still going at it with no signs of slowing down. So I think my stock default answer is still going to be 3 to 4 years. You want to play out at least probably Mac Jones' rookie contract. He's got the infrastructure in place. He loves Matt Groh, his new de facto GM. And for him, I think it's all kind of energizing. But again, you know, I might be saying the same thing in 3 to 4 years. We'll have to check back.
Well, Andrew, great stuff. And you can obviously read Andrew Callahan's stuff in the Boston Herald. It's going to be an interesting week next week to see what they're able to do. I mean, obviously, they've kind of been called out by their owner as far as their drafts of the past. And hopefully you can hit, you know, two, I don't want to say home runs, but at least, you know, two triples in a row. I think we all thought that last year's was successful, and, you know, maybe they can start to get something building back up again.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys. Be well.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. We'll talk to you soon. By the way, I'm looking at this Bill Burr seating chart. Yeah. It looks like it's set up like a concert. That dude has got balls. That's awesome. And you know what? Good for him. I hope he sells that thing out. Because how crazy would it be if there was a comedian that could walk into Fenway Park and sell out, what, 35,000 seats?
Yeah.
I don't know many that could do that. But we have those tickets at 7:55. We'll give away in just about 20 minutes. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Toucher and Rich.
It sounds like the biggest nightmare. And why anyone would choose it, I don't know.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's Toucher and Rich. Adam Jones, Joe Murray in studio. We got those Bill Burr tickets in about 10 minutes. And, Adam, your kids aren't old enough to play sports yet, are they?
I mean, no. My kid turns 4 in like a month, so he does like, we take him to like Saturday soccer, but it's just a bunch of herding cats. Like, it's not like, you know, they're playing sports. We're just all chasing our kids around and like, no one knows what they're doing.
Well, at that age, I think it was a little bit older. I think I've talked about this before. We signed one of them up for like karate. And it was awesome because I've said it. It's like human cockfighting. Like, yeah. When they actually have to fight each other, when you get like 2 6-year-olds who have to fight each other, there's that moment you go,
oh, wait.
Whoa, they're really going to do this?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy to think about, actually.
Oh, yeah. Like, huh. And like the sensei guy was, you know, overly serious, which was kind of awesome.
Yeah.
But he was like, all right, you're here. Go!
And then the two kids like, are like, you know, whoa.
Like, are we actually supposed to? And then they just start like kind of kicking each other. And he's like, no, more. And then they start kicking each other harder. And you want to jump in, but you're like, well, this is what we signed him up for, right? Like to learn how to.
What have we done?
No, but it's
we've created a killing machine. What have we done?
It's great because, like, you look at the other dads, and when one takes another one down, you kind of give him the old nod.
Hey, like, yeah, that's right. That's my boy. Right.
And then, you know, when the other kid goes down, you're like, look at that puss. He's never going to amount to anything.
Oh, maybe I should get Lucas into karate. It's that great. Sounds kind of great.
It's way better than you think it's going to be. It's, as I said,
until I'm emasculated by all the other dads. But yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Well, you see, so for years, you know, I was the coach of one of my son's baseball teams, and I was there for a year where you had to coach pitch.
Yeah.
There is nothing more demoralizing than being a coach at a kid when the coach pitches, because there's always at least one kid on the team who just can't hit.
Yep.
And you feel awful.
Yeah.
That you, every pitch, like the kid keeps missing, and you're just like, you know what? Every parent thinks I'm the jackass that your kid can't hit. And you don't want to like stop everything and embarrass the kid. It's just, it's the worst. It's so demoralizing for everybody.
So like how many pitches would you throw?
So when we first started doing it, there was no limit. And then after a while, we kind of had to put a limit on it, because there were like several kids who just couldn't hit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was almost like,
so what was the limit? Like 10? Like 10, that's an excruciating amount of time, I would imagine.
I think we had it at like 15.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
I would think.
And it just kills any kind of fun or momentum, but you feel bad for the kid. But my kid's old enough now where it's still a coach pitching, but I'm not coaching anymore. It's still a coach pitching, but they're a little bit older. And something happened the other day that for some reason I can't get over. Like it was almost like a see red moment, and it's almost completely irrational. Actually, tell me if it's irrational. So my son gets up to bat. And, you know, he's got his bat up, and he's been taking him to the batting cage, so he's actually, you know, got an okay swing.
Yeah.
And so he gets up there, and he swings, misses. First one was a legit bad pitch from the coach. Second one, swings, misses. Probably not the best pitch from the coach. Third one, swings, misses. It was a good pitch. And then another dad who is not a coach.
Uh-oh.
Got off the stands and walked over to my son and, like, straightened out his batting stance.
Oh no.
And showed him like a couple of like fake swings.
So I thought you were going to say he heckles him. This is worse, I think.
No.
Yeah, this is worse than like
got up and I'm going to show this boy how to swing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sitting like right
near this guy. You clearly don't have a father figure in your life. Let me show you
how to
swing the lumber here, kid.
I got so pissed.
Yeah.
Like, and I didn't say anything. I just let it simmer. I think my wife was talking to somebody else, you know, at the time, and I like tapped her and looked over there, and she's like, why is he touching our kid?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know, but I don't like it. Something inside made me just want to go up to the guy and like scream at him. But like a puss, I just sat there.
So
because when he sat back down,
what did he do? Did he hit a home run or something? Like all of a sudden he's just like cranking it out of the ballpark.
That would have been the biggest nightmare if he would have gone up and cranked one immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't. He missed the next four. And then he finally hit like a little grounder out.
Yeah.
But I have been stewing on this for like a week now.
And the guy's not like a pseudo coach. He's not like it. Huh.
No.
That's very strange.
Came right off the bench and went over and like straightened my kid out to do that, and like started like showing him how to like. I mean, knowing I'm sitting right there, like I've talked to this guy before. The father's there, and that's the coach's job too. It's not my job. As a matter of fact, I think that should be a disconnect between the parent and the coach. As a matter of fact, I think kids learn better. Matter of fact, that's one of the main reasons I decided not to coach this year, because I think he's getting old enough to where you don't need dad to be coach, because then, you know, there's a feeling that maybe you're playing favoritism, and sometimes they start to whine a little bit more because like, but dad, why won't you let me play first base?
Yeah.
Where you wouldn't do that with a coach. And when that dude walked over in there and did that, it just like, I don't know. I keep thinking like what I would do if he did that again. Like, do you jump up and stop him and say, I got this?
It came from a good place, but at the same time, it's like, dude, I'm bringing my kid to the batting cages. Where this guy can't throw good pitches. You saw three, it's like, not you. Not him either.
No,
you know what I mean?
But I mean, I like, for some reason, like, I'm looking at it now, and I got like, I'm irrationally angry when I think about that. So I don't know if I should say anything to him. Am I out of my mind? 617-779-0985. Because if he does it again, I still haven't figured out what I would do.
Yeah.
Because you can't stop the game and make a scene and go up and walk to the guy.
Yeah.
Do you wait till he's done and then just say, hey, man, I'll teach the kid how to swing?
Yeah.
Because then it becomes like a massive issue. Once again, these kids are like 10 years old. They're not that old.
I've never coached young kids, and I don't have kids, but I coached kids that were going into high school. And like a lot of parents would get involved, and I would literally tell the kid, hey, man, don't listen to him. I'll teach you how to do it. But it happened a lot. Like I had to go over to like some of the parents every once in a while and be like, hey man, we're working on something.
But you were an actual coach.
Yeah, it was Pop Warner. Different. But I was like, hey man, we're working on something. I know you're trying to teach him something, but we're working on something different.
Well, when
and
I
say it like that.
When I was a coach, one thing that did happen, and it happened more times than you would think, is that like a dad would come in and try to tell us how to coach and then all of a sudden be the honorary third coach.
Yep.
Like with just like I'm going to be the coach.
Yeah. Right, no one asked for this.
Yeah,
but you're
nobody
just,
asked for you to be here.
He's like the first base coach all the time.
And it was just to basically show up us coaches that we don't know what we're doing.
Right.
And that kind of pissed me off. But then at least you can look them in the eye because they have to talk to you.
Right.
And you can kind of, you know, box them out.
So you said you've had a conversation with this guy before, right?
Well, we know each other, but it's not we're friends. Let's go to Brian real quick online. Line one. Brian, what's up, man?
Rich, I couldn't agree with you more. I don't want to say where I'm from, but I coach in a local hockey league, a youth hockey league, and a team that beat us 8-1 had practice the other night, and I turn around and the coach that killed us is working with my goalie and showing him where to go, where to be.
Oh, boy.
And I turned around, and all I wanted to do was RKO the guy.
Out of nowhere.
I just had to walk away.
it's like something inside of you. It's like the ultimate insult. The ultimate. And the guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Listen, my kid's not the best, but he's not like... It was three pitches, and the guy went up there and just, oh, God, it's pissing me off
working,
to talk about
and
it.
You are working with
this poor little this poor little orphan who's clearly had no influence whatsoever.
Right. He needs a man in his life.
Right, exactly. Oh, clearly needs a father figure in his life, yeah.
And this guy's got a blog. Let's go to line two. That's a different story. Mitch, what's up, man?
All right. So I have a similar story. My kid's in a basketball league, and he's about 9, 10, and that's the age of the league. They don't let them play defense at a certain point on the court because they don't want them playing full press or anything like that. And one of the issues that they had with the team was they had problems manning up, so they told the kids to stand on top of one another. But one of the problems with my kid covering one of the other kids is that he would run by him. So I told him during a timeout, hey, give him a step. He's shooting at the three-point line. He can't make it from there. Give him a step, and then when he goes to the basket, you'll beat him there. There's no way he can score on you. So for two straight quarters, no, nothing. Kid doesn't score, 0 points. All the other kids start losing their man trying to cover the kid. My kid isn't completely covering because he's not standing on him. So the coach tells my kid to stand right up against him. Immediately after that, he threatens to bench him because he wouldn't do it. And then the kid scored 2 points and just... They lost by two.
Wow.
I was livid.
Yeah. You know. By the way, let's go to Chris in line four because I think Chris might have the best solution to all of this. Chris, what's up, man?
Hey, this guy who helped your kid, right, or quote-unquote helped your kid, he's got a kid on the team too, right?
He does.
Yeah, so what you do is you sit and wait until that kid swings the three pitches and misses. Then you come out from the stand,
Great idea.
You got to make sure to make eye contact with that dad.
Yeah.
As you're going, while you're doing it, while you walk back to the seat, just turn about fair play, dude, and see how it feels for that guy.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Just do the same to his kid.
Yeah.
Hey, Ralphie.
Yeah.
But the whole time,
right there under all of our noses. Yeah. That was so obvious, and it's just that's the right answer.
But don't
that's 100%
even, but
the right
don't
answer.
Even look at the kid the whole time you're talking to him. Just be looking at the dad. So here's what you do, son. Is you take it, call him son. Here's what you do, son. Put your arm up like this. Oh, that would be so great.
Yeah, and then like take him out for a hamburger after.
Right, and then of course I'm the a-hole after that. Ugh. That's a great idea. But I could never do that.
No, that's the move.
But that's my fantasy. That's my fantasy right there. That is absolutely perfect.
If his kid takes what'd you say karate with your kid, you could just challenge him in the ring. Is that what they call it? The karate ring? What
do
they
call it? Sure.
You just challenge him there in the dojo or whatever.
Sweep the leg.
Where was the coach on this, by the way?
I'm not going to blame the coach because I've been in positions like that before where you're just like, all right, man, come on, let's move on.
Where was he? I was just curious.
He was pitching. He was pitching.
Oh, okay.
So. Yeah, yeah. But you know what? I think he was even kind of like, all right, dude, because they got to deal with the as a coach, you deal with dads who want to like pretend they're coaches and stuff all the time.
Right.
So I don't put any blame on them. But
that made me,
I saw red, and I haven't gotten over it in a week.
What type of parental insecurity do you have to need to coach other kids randomly?
It pisses me off, and I don't know how they don't have that thing in their body where they don't realize that that's completely out of place. All right, call number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to see comedian Bill Burr make history as the first comedian to perform at Fenway Park, America's most beloved ballpark, on August 21st. For tickets, tickets and info, visit redsox.com/BillBurr. Tickets on sale Friday at 10 a.m. Call our 10-617-779-0985.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.